barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20. 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.
It is a toxic Thursday, September 28th, 2022. Welcome to Menace to Sports. I am Zach Smith, your host. We are live on YouTube as you watch, but if you didn't know, I'm live on TikTok too, because I felt like today was kind of one of those shows, Chris, that goes back to the roots. And for those of you that don't know the genesis of this show, I encourage you to join Patreon and go back and listen to episode one, because Apple Podcasts only let you have like a most recent 100 episodes or whatever it is. So to hear the old days back when I was on one and I was ready to take on the world, and I still am, but I just have shifted this show a little bit to more college football content and less taking on the world. But today feels like a day where we are going to do both. And because yesterday was wild. So here's the genesis of this whole story. Josh Gattis came out when he got to Michigan and had little dick energy and said, I called the plays at Bama and we're going to do this. I'm going to have the same success here at Michigan that I had at Bama calling the plays. Mike Locksley had just gotten the head coaching job at Maryland. And he was like, timeout. Because reporters asked him, did Josh Gattis call the plays at Alabama? And he was like, no, I was the offensive coordinator. I called the plays, which is true. That's what happened. I could cite 17 different sources. I also got the job at Alabama and was explained and told what the job description was. Pass game coordinator, receiver coach. That was just, the pass game coordinator is just a title. Mike Locksley's running the offense and going to call the plays. But if you do a great job, you could potentially be the guy that takes over for Mike Locksley. That's what I was told, right? I promised Josh Gattis at the very best got the same offer. So he didn't call the plays. He actually didn't do a great job. So Nick Saban wasn't going to hire him as the coordinator. That's why he went to Michigan. No one in their right mind would go to Michigan and be the coordinator instead of Alabama because Mike Locksley left. So that's point one.
Point one.
He gets to Michigan, starts calling plays. He actually was the play caller. They were awful. I mean, they were seventh in the Big Ten in every category. Seventh at Michigan. Now, the second or third most talented team in the Big Ten. Second and third most talented offense in the Big Ten. They were seventh, eighth in every analytical category. So you would say that's an epic failure, right? Fast forward to 2021. Jim Harbaugh realizes that Josh Gattis is not the answer. So he takes over, institutes his Stanford flavor, two tight ends, power run game. This is not the speed and space offense. They improved. He goes to Miami. A bunch of fans are on Twitter asking him about the transition and, you know, what made him change the offense. And he knows the offense changed. He knows that Jim Harbaugh was the one that made the transition and was the reason behind the success. So he starts arguing that they didn't change. And this is the point where I had a beef with Josh Gattis. Because now, not only is he lying about calling plays at Bama, now he's lying about the offense didn't change. I have had this show for 4 years. I've watched and studied every Michigan game. There was a dramatic change in offensive philosophy at Michigan in 2021 because Jim Harbaugh went back to his roots. So I got a big issue with him arguing with Michigan fans on Twitter, because in my opinion, as a coach, you should shut your fucking mouth and do a great job and people will talk very highly of you. That's I don't believe. And I got a phone call from an ACC coordinator 2 nights ago that was like, hey, why am I have like 50 people hitting me up that you put Josh Gattis in a body bag. What'd you do? Like, there's a video on YouTube. I mean, this shit was going viral, so much so that then Josh Gattis, the little bitch that he is, went to Miami, the compliance, the administration, and showed him the video and said, how does he have this video? Went to the video department, said, how did he get this video? Well, guess what, Josh? I didn't get it from Miami because it's not your property. They had the audacity to contact Exos, who has the software that you watch film on. They don't own the video either. Exos contacted YouTube and got 7 videos dung on our channel, and I got threatened with our whole channel getting deleted. So now people in the, we went in Twitter Spaces yesterday. We're going to get to it eventually. We went in Twitter Spaces yesterday and people said, it sounds like something's personal. Yeah, bitch, it's personal now. Not only did he take 7 videos down and this channel lost $200 immediately. Our revenue is about $7,000 and it went down to $6,800 immediately when they took him down. Now you tell me if that's personal. Now you stole money from me. And on top of that, I got a real problem with phony bitches.
Phony.
Real problem with them, Chris. So anyways, I'll let you talk for a minute. I'm going to get a drink of water before I really go off.
So I guess, you know, the whole Josh Gattis thing got really crazy because yesterday we were in Spaces trying to talk ball, and I made 2 quick points, that Josh Gattis isn't who you guys thought he was. And then additionally, you know, Josh Gattis is the biggest issue. Like, you don't get – so I called my own coach, my own source, and I wanted to figure out how much Josh Gattis made. And I was told that he makes a ride right around that $1.8 million to coach receivers and call the plays. Zach, when you get paid $1.8 million to be a coordinator, that puts you in the top 5%. That means the unit that better be the best coach unit out there should be wide receivers. And guess what we found out? We pulled the film. We talked ball. That's not the case. And also, additionally, if you were getting $1.8 million, oh, here we go.
If you don't know, if you just listen to the show, King Bronco is a mainstay. He gives us the insight into college football that we all yearn for. So here is his insight. King Bronco says, yeah, Caddis was they kick at Jabberslaw and make a non-feet ball nest like where they was at when lint spells. Ain't snail slapping like they was having it. Haven't. Gattis be ratting out there looking like some of them boys. No batting out there. Been dumbing down, but them boys up north be looking some stallions ready to fight. King Bronco answers the question. We can end the show. He told us what it was.
He said Gattis be ratting. He definitely ratted on us. He did everything he could to get that video taken down.
He snitched so hard because he didn't want the country to see somebody that actually knows football breaking down how awful his offense was and how bad his players were playing. And this is not devoid of blame on Tyler Van Dyke. He didn't play well either, but he played better last year.
Exactly. When you're the OC and your quarterback regresses, that means you're not earning your $1.8 million. So we hopped in a space, Zach, and we were trying to talk ball, and they said that you attacking Gattis is personal. They said they'd never seen you attack anybody else but only Gattis. And I was like, okay, that's so false. We go on the show, we call people for what it is, what we see, and what everyone else is scared to say. That's why we love this platform.
The list is extensive, right?
Mm-hmm.
From Dan Mullen to Tom Herman. I mean, I have a long list of people that
You just did a whole fucking Dabo Sweeney series.
But here's what's funny about Miami fans, and this has always been the case. Some Miami fans. So they were in this space talking crazy, talking all kinds of shit about me. And then Chris, my whole group chat, my Menace group chat, Chris is texting me, you got to come into space, pop into space. And I was working, got a bunch of shit going on. And then I was like, all right, I got to drive to this meeting I have. So I was like, I'm going to jump in this space. So I jump in this space immediately, put me on a mic. And they want their energy changed completely. You talk about some energy changers. It went from I'm this, I'm that, like talking all kinds of crazy shit. I pop in there.
They called you Mr. Smith.
Mr. Smith. And I stood in the paint. And I want everyone to know I will always stand in the paint because I'm a firm believer in what I say. Like, I don't know the best way to put this. I own shit I'm wrong about. I own things in my past that I've done wrong. I own them. And I will stand. I'm not proud of being wrong or proud of things I've done wrong, but I absolutely own them. But I'm also going to stand in the paint and call you a liar if you want to talk some shit that you don't know what you're talking about and it's not true.
Facts.
So all this shit they were talking, it's like the real problem here is Miami fans. Those Miami fans. You should be pointing that energy at Josh Gattis and the offense. Why are you pointing that energy at me? because I exposed it, because I said it. That's some weak shit. That's some bitch shit is what it is.
And we knew it was some bitch shit because the entire time, Zach, instead of addressing anything you said or telling you how you were wrong when you weren't in there, it was this is literally what it was. Your partner is a bitch. I can't believe you associate with him. Fuck you and your partner. This, that. I got Zach. They threatened to beat my ass. Threatened to beat me.
They threatened to fight Chris.
So
they and it's just today. So funny because they just don't have any facts. Mm-hmm. They can't fight anything I say with facts because the facts are on my side, right? And that's the best part about reality is when you have reality on your side, you can stand in a paint and battle anybody. Mm-hmm. Now, when you're lying or when you have a weak argument, you're going to get bodied in the paint. And that's what happened in that space. People mm-hmm. got bodied in the paint. Because the facts are on my side on this. And I've been bodied in the paint. It's no big deal. You come in the paint with a weak-ass argument, you're going to get bodied.
It's so crazy because when Ed Warner was bad, guess what? Ohio State fans were ragging on Ed Warner. But when Gattis has been bad, Zach, they defended him like he raised them, like he's their dad. Talking about wait till he gets his own players. Talking about this, talking about that. Like, what are we talking about?
It was bizarre. It was a bizarre occurrence. And then I thought I was going to jump into Miami space after that, but it come to find out it was one of your spaces, which by the way was far more civil. It was actually entertaining. The Miami one was just a bunch of debauchery.
Shout out best damn spaces and locker boys.
It was great. And I mean, people asked questions. It was awesome. Like it was just like the Troy Smith space that we put on Patreon. I mean, it was really good stuff. So anyways, I had to get that off my chest and I was going to do a whole Miami dismantle, but I don't have to. They're dismantling themselves on the field. This comes from a place of someone that wants Miami to do well. And I'm going to preface it again. You will thank me later. When Mario Cristobal fires Josh Gattis and they get a competent coordinator in there and Miami starts elevating, you're going to be like, damn, he was right. Like, I shouldn't have went at him so hard. Gattis was awful. It's fine. We'll welcome you back to the show. But it just... it's just ridiculous that
they were mad at me. That's either the comments. They were mad at me when they only averaged 1.6 yards a carry. They'll be mad at me.
Well, it's funny because college football fans don't like reality. I mean, Ohio State fans will get pissed at me when I'm give an honest take on Ohio State that isn't positive. And I could give 7 right now, but fans only want positivity. That's it.
But I guess like in this platform, like a lot of fan bases really I've learned to appreciate it because then the losses don't sting as bad. Like if something is bad, we'll talk about it on the show. And then if your team loses because of that, it's like, damn, like Zach told us, like, okay, we kind of saw this coming. So we'll move on from it. But Zach, I want to move on and say, like, do you think Gattis is on the hot seat?
Gattis is absolutely on the hot seat because he can't read, can't, I mean, okay, that's Kent State. I'm sorry. Can't recruit, can't call plays, can't coach receivers, making 1.8 mil. Like, what are we talking about? He's on the hottest seat of any coordinator in America. He absolutely is on the hot seat.
I do want to talk about that for a real quick second because there's this belief that, okay, once Gattis gets his players in, like the misconception that he'll be able to recruit the city pretty well. But Zach, if you look at his all-time recruits, he's only ever landed 1 5-star wide receiver, only one. That guy ended up hitting the portal. You look at top 100 players that are wide receivers, he has none outside of the one. Everyone else has been outside of 100. I'm talking 100, 130, down to 150, 160. His entire career, he has landed less top 150 players than Brian Hartline.
Chris,
and you think he's going to go down there and win? You think he's going to go down there and
play? Say it again, Chris. You froze. He's landed. Oh, what about in top compared to Hartline?
He has landed less top 150 players at receiver in his career than Hartline has landed in a single season at Ohio State. You could pull any individual season, and Brian Hartline has landed more.
Listen, this is what it is. And if I promise you, Miami fans, I promise you, if Hartline was bad, I would be singing it loudly. I don't care. And I would have even more reason to, right? That would be a jealousy. Like I'd be jealous that he got my job and sucked, and I'd be pissed and I'd be trying to tell everyone, right? But he's really good. So I'm telling you, Brian Hartline's probably the best receiver coach in the country. I'm not saying that for any reason other than he is. Like he just fucking is. And so I guess I need to stop trying to build up my credibility, but Josh Gattis is so bad at recruiting. He's landed one player in the top 150. And he, at Michigan, his last year, was resorting to trying to fuck a recruit's mom. Not trying to, did, to get the kid. And he still didn't get him. He stuck his dick in the mom and couldn't even make her come to Michigan. Like, this guy is, he's an absolute phony. And it's nothing personal. He might be a nice guy, might be a good dad. I don't have any idea. But he is an absolute phony.
If you take just this year's wide receiver class, like the Brian Hartline's taken, and compared it to Josh Gattis's, all four of them, or all three of the four, excuse me, would be in the Gattis top five wide receiver recruits ever, just from this one year. Like, Zach, that's unreal. And you want him to go get kids in South Florida when you have to go battle schools like Bama, Texas, and Brian Hartline? Like, shit, literally, if Hartline and Gattis walk into a school together, I can promise you who's not landing that kid. I can promise you.
Josh Gattis never beat me on a recruit ever. Not one. You can't find one. At Penn State, I wasn't at Ohio State when he was at Michigan, but he didn't beat me on one kid ever. Never. Like, and it just is what it is. It's fine.
The one kid that he inherited, everyone wants to talk about, oh, they never had stuff for speed and space. They never had receivers. They had fucking Donovan Peoples-Jones, who to me was one of the 10 best high school wide receiver prospects we'd seen in modern-day recruiting. And guess what they didn't do with him? They didn't get him in speed or space.
They didn't do anything.
They had my boy
with
out there on an island wishing he went to Ohio State.
They had him as a punt returner only.
Right. That was the only time anyone was ever scared of him. You talked about when you and the staff were worried about Donovan Peoples-Jones was not in speed and space. It was in punt return.
Punt return. That was the only – when we game-planned Donovan Peoples-Jones at Michigan, the only concern that Urban and our entire staff had was when he was the punt returner. Nobody cared. Nobody cared when he was a receiver because they didn't know how to use him. And I'm telling you, that was underlying theme. The whole defensive staff said, Donovan Peoples-Jones could be a great player, but they do not use him for shit. Like, we don't need to worry about him. Let's see what King Bronco has to say, because they both got from here ATS, they gotting moose badges to show it. And all of us got just all footballs. See, again,
Tariq Black said, speed and space, I'm getting the fuck out of here. I'm going to Texas.
Everyone did.
I'm saying it's
an underlying theme, right? Justin Shorter goes to Penn State. Nah, this Josh Gattis guy ain't it. Hits the portal, goes to the Florida Gators. You just mentioned the kid, Tariq Black. This offense ain't it. Bam, I'm bouncing to Texas. Like, all you have to do is pay attention. History predicts the future. It is not that hard. This guy's been incompetent. It's just like Ed Warner. No different, right? No different. And my favorite thing about, and it's prototypical Miami fan bullshit, is now I'm a racist because I put a clown face on Josh Gattis. It's the weakest shit I've ever heard in my fucking life. I did put a clown face on Desmond Howard. He's black too, but he's a clown too. Sorry. Has nothing to do with being black. Dan Mullen. I mean, I could go through the list. Ed Warner, Dan Mullen, Tom Herman, Dabo Sweeney. Dabo Sweeney's whole staff except CJ Spiller. All the white ones.
Dabo's cousins.
Dabo's cousins. I mean, I literally made a graphic. I got it up here somewhere. Maybe I might have deleted it out of here. I made a graphic, and the only person I didn't call a clown was the one black coach, CJ Spiller. So the racist shit is such a weak play because they got two options. Two options when they realize they have been bodied in the paint. If they're black, they could play a race card, which that happened.
Yeah.
After I left the space, they would have never said that shit in front of me because I'd have bodied that too. Or
it's insane because I'm black.
That's the best part. I'm like, yeah, I'm this huge racist that I brought Chris on and now I'm paying him good money to be on my show. You're right. I couldn't find a white guy out there anywhere. But that's the first thing they do. The second thing they do is go to bullshit with nonsense ESPN headlines that have been proven to have no backing and basis. It's like, that's what you went with? That I'm a racist. And by the way, Brett McMurphy tried that one too. Mm-hmm. And it got bodied in the paint by, guess what? All my former players, all of them black, all bodied it. Like, nah, that ain't it. Like, you say what you want about them, but that one ain't it.
Hey, so Zach, I got to ask you.
Yeah.
My guy, Big Homie. Oh, if you got offered the Miami wide receiver job, would you go? $1.4 million.
I'm in South Beach. I said I wouldn't coach again, but now this shit's personal. If Mario calls me, I promise you, that offense will look crisp. He don't even need to make me the coordinator. I'm not out for. Just let me coach wideouts. Those wideouts will block their ass off. They'll dominate one-on-one coverage, and we will get your pick of the litter in South Florida.
There's a belief that you can't recruit South Florida.
No, they said I couldn't recruit Miami, and that has nothing to do with me. That has to do with Miami. Yeah, Miami kids were never going to Columbus. It's just a different culture down there. You go down into Dade County, it's a different culture. I never got a Miami kid because I only recruited there, you know, a dozen times. And those kids are enamored with the SEC. They want to stay in warm weather. They look at you like, nah, bro, cold? No way. Like, no chance. You go up to – and so why would I go down there? Because you go up to Broward County, those kids are like, coach, I just want to play football and become a great player. They didn't care where you go. It's a different kid in Broward than Dade. And you know what? Maybe that's the fucking problem. You ever think of that? Maybe the problem is Miami football at the high school level, at the youth level. Maybe that's the fucking problem. Because there's a different culture in Broward County. And it's not a white or black thing. There's mostly black kids in Broward County. It's a different culture in Miami. And maybe that's the problem.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
How many American Heritage kids would leave the state if you were coaching at Miami?
I mean, very few. Very few.
Gotcha.
If any.
That's all I needed. So there's a couple American Heritage kids that are leaving the state now, coming up north.
A bunch of American Heritage kids are not going to Miami. And I just wonder, where's Josh Gattis recruiting right now? Like, how's Miami's recruiting going? They're killing it? He's got like a bunch of 5-stars committed. He's out recruiting Heartline?
Nope.
No, didn't think so.
Nope.
I don't need to make this whole show about Josh Gattis, but just they got me riled up. You start attacking a man's character, and then they want to bring up a bunch of court legal shit that is ongoing, and that's my favorite. When people start posting child support things, it's like, you have no idea what you're talking about. Like, literally no idea. Like, you understand, dude, just for YouTube out, and we're getting back to it. Do you understand that if you're a couple $1,000s in owed child support, that they put handcuffs on you and put you in jail? That's happens.
That's just how it goes.
Especially that's what here happens in Delaware County, Ohio, Franklin County.
Yeah, you know, in Ohio as a whole, they don't play about that.
Like, so you just, that's played out too. Like, at some point you see the shit looks like Swiss cheese. There's holes in it everywhere. So anyways, I'm not here to defend myself anymore, Chris, but
that's cool.
I do have a throwback segment, Chris. It's a segment that I used to do all the time, and we might bring it back from time to time. This is a segment called Twitter Tough Guy, because there's a bunch of Twitter tough guys. You guys see them all the time. And I got Menace Army going in on a couple of them right now, but I don't know this guy, Chris. You mentioned he's a YouTuber. But here's what he had to say. Zach Smith is the biggest loser fraud in the college football world. He got his boss fired, embarrassed his family, and an otherwise respectable university. Continues to call Dabo a racist simply because he got embarrassed in the playoffs. Zach, debate me, clown emoji. You won't, though, middle finger. I immediately responded, debate you on what? I think I said what your favorite cereal is, because that's about all you're qualified to debate me on. And that's my favorite. What was his name, Chris? Foreskin Pete is his YouTube name. What do you think Foreskin Pete's competency or resume looks like? Like, maybe played high school football? Maybe?
Yeah, I don't even...
The APB is out. Foreskin Pete would like to debate me. We will do it on my show. I will never go on his show because I'm not going to pump his platform up. But Foreskin Pete can come on and debate me on here, whatever topic he wants. If it's Clemson, Dabo, I don't think I've ever called Dabo a racist. I mentioned the fact they were using racial slurs at practice. That was factual. I mentioned the fact that the whole university is named after like racist slave owners, but they're trying to cancel these other things. And I'm like, why aren't we canceling Clemson? Literally, John Clemson was a slave-owning racist. But okay, I've never said Dabo was a racist that I recall. I don't even think I believe that Dabo would. If someone said Dabo's a racist, I'd be like, I don't believe that. You can't coach wideouts as a career and be racist. You just can't.
Like, got you. I've said that Dabo's racist, and that's just because I have a different stance on what racist is. But you've kind of never stood on that. So
no. But anyways, Chris, we can move on.
What a fabulous day, man. What a fabulous day.
It is a good day. It is a good day. Going to Justine and I are going to a meeting after this at Yogi's on Hard, if anyone's interested. We have a meeting to go to attend. So it is going to be a great day.
I want to do something. Since you do Twitter tough guy, I would do Twitter nice guy. Shout out to Gmo. After I was getting bodied in the paint for a little bit in Miami, he reached out, and that's my guy, and pumped the platform. That's my Twitter nice guy of the day. She did a Twitter tough guy.
You're such a nice person, Chris. Like, I got all this animosity to get out of my body, and I got Twitter tough guys, douchebags, bitches, all this other stuff, and you're like, can I call someone nice real quick, please?
Yeah, Twitter nice guy. All right. Let's go. Let's get to the show. Before we didn't hit on this, it came out about a week ago, but I want to touch on it real quick. There's reports that Herm Edwards obviously got fired from Arizona State. There was reports that members of the staff were leaking information to opponents and to other sites to hurt the team. Zach, what do you make of this, or do you hear this?
I think it's complete bullshit. I can't imagine anyone doing this. And further to the point, I promise you, no one on the football staff did it because that would get them fired too. Exactly. So it doesn't add up. And so then you go, all right, who was leaking shit? Now it's an assistant AD, maybe even the AD or someone in the administration, because they want to get him fired. Okay. That I could go down that conspiracy theory a little bit, except for what intel do they have? Like, the assistant AD at Ohio State right now could give Michigan very minimal. Like, what could they possibly give them? Like, look out their window from across the street with their cell phone and video of practice. Like, what are they distributing? They don't have game plans. They aren't in the meetings. They don't know the play calls. They don't know they don't know anything. And it goes back to sports media and fucking Foreskin Pete. They don't have anything of value to share. So what are they sharing? Like, travel itineraries?
I don't know what they're sharing. They have no intel on, like, players. They have no intel. Like you said, they don't have the game plans. I don't know what they're sharing, unless they're sharing like injury information, but I don't know if they're able to get that as well. I don't know how much that hinders.
Oh, that Chris, Foreskin is live right now. He's got 46 viewers. Well, we're around 500. I mean, every show we've ever done, most of the time it gets up to around 7 or 8, but good for Foreskin. Anyways. Yeah. It's bizarre. So I'm calling that fake news, cap, whatever you want to call it. I don't believe that for a minute. But if it was true, what are they really sharing? Yeah. I mean, it's not like they're telling the other team the play call right before the play. Like, even if they broke in the facility and stole game plans and tip sheets, like, you still have to stop the play.
It does feel like a little bit of an excuse, kind of a feel bad for Herm Edwards kind of thing. So I wonder what camp that came from, because it's just like reports and sources.
I mean, I can tell you exactly what camp that came from. That is the PR stunt of an agent.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Trying to make his coach client look better.
Yeah, trying to get Herm another job. I don't know. Is Herm, you think he'll get another job, or you think he's done?
No, I mean, I think he's going to retire, as he should.
I don't think college was ever for him.
No, college was never for him. I mean, even to the point where the rumors, which again are uncorroborated, who knows if they're true, but he really wanted no part of one following rules. And so they had to babysit him because he didn't know the NCAA rules, never tried to learn them. And two, wasn't really into recruiting.
Yeah. Was the leaking stuff just about kind of like compliance, taking notes of all the rules he was breaking? Was that like the leaking stuff?
I guess like
the compliance office talking NCAA. So I don't know. Anyway, Zach, I want to move forward. I want to do a quick assessing the threat segment, and we're now 4 weeks into the season. I want to get your take on how these two teams match up with Ohio State. First, how does Bama match up with Ohio State to this point?
Well, and I said it before the year, and it's only gotten become a stronger argument that I think Ohio State is the best equipped team to beat Bama. Okay. And the reason why I say that is Ohio State's got, in my opinion, after watching the Wisconsin game, I think Ohio State's going to have the toughest offensive line in college football. And Bama has a ridiculous run defense. Their defense is outstanding. Mm-hmm. Their weakness on defense is their corners, but they're young. I think by the time Ohio State would play Bama, I think all three are extremely talented. I think they're going to be good players. So it's really strength on strength there. When Ohio State has the football, Ohio State's receivers are honestly about on the same pace as Bama's corners, right? They're talented. You know they're going to play extremely well. They just haven't really exploded yet. And that's coming off of a ridiculous performance against Wisconsin, but that was mostly zone coverage. That was mostly, honestly, the run game and CJ Stroud. And the receivers played really well. I mean, they played exceptional. Probably their best game they've played. But they still aren't ready to go win a national championship yet. Good news is they don't have to. So I think the secondary receiver matchup is a great thing. I think Nick Saban versus Ryan Day, that genius against genius, the defensive mind versus offensive mind, I think it's outstanding. It just matches up so perfectly. And then the other side of the ball, the one concern you have on defense right now for Ohio State is the secondary. Mm-hmm. I know they're riddled with injuries, but still Denzel Burke wasn't playing exceptionally well, you know, but prior to getting hurt. But Bama's receivers are underwhelming. They're underperforming. They don't look like they looked last year, or
and they
really
have some injuries as well. It's weird because they have the injuries as well. It's like a mirror almost.
It truly is a perfect match, right? And then the only edge that Bama has, in my opinion, is I don't know how. And I do know how. Ohio State runs a three safety defense, right? It's a safety driven defense. Somehow, some way, Jim Knowles has to bottle up Jahmyr Gibbs because he's good in the run game. He's ridiculous in the pass game. So how they cover Jahmyr Gibbs will be the key to the game when we get there down the road, hopefully. But right now, I think it's an absolutely phenomenal matchup.
How do you think Georgia matches up with Ohio State?
I think Ohio State is a much better team than Georgia. I just do. I know that Georgia has a solid defense, but I don't see anything that presents a problem for Ohio State. Georgia does not have as good a defense as Bama. Let's just put that out there. Like, if we want to be honest, Bama has a slightly better defense than Georgia. So,
you think so?
Oh, I do. I think Ohio State would beat Georgia by 7 points. And because Georgia's strength is their defense. We know that. I don't think Ohio State's offense would have any problems bottling up Stetson Bennett, Kenny McIntosh, the average skill they have on the perimeter. Yeah. The big question mark would be, what do they do against Brock Bowers? Now, I know Michael Mayer is not Brock Bowers, and he had two flash plays. And Brock Bowers will certainly get his in that game. He'll have some flash plays, and they're very creative on how they get him the ball. So it would really be like how to shut down Georgia's offense will become how do you shut down Brock Bowers? And Jim Knowles will have a great plan for that. And it's going to be with brackets, a lot of the things he did. I mean, he's going to let Cam Brown cover Brock Bowers. We watched him cover one-on-one. Cam Brown, a corner, cover an NFL tight end in Michael Mayer at Notre Dame. And I know Brock Bowers is a much better player, but he will let Cameron Brown go cover Brock Bowers. Yeah. So that's what it's going to come down to.
I definitely would like to see our defensive line against Georgia's O-line. I think kind of like the improvements we made in the physicality there. I want to see if we can blow them off the ball, because if you force Stetson Bennett into third and longs, I think that's when you're going to win the game.
Here's the thing, Chris.
A big part of it.
The tough thing right now is it's too early to tell, and I hate
it's
being
super
that,
early. That's why
I hate being that voice of reason where it's like it's too early to talk about this, because Ohio State hasn't played a team that'll drop back in a deep drop back and pass the ball. We haven't seen a pass rush. Because teams are using RPOs, quick game, just getting the ball out because they don't want to mess with it. They don't want to see – other teams don't want to see the pass rush. That's why we haven't seen the pass rush. And, I mean, you saw flashes here and there. Javonte Jean-Baptiste, I've said several times, I think looks like a really dominant pass rusher. But we just haven't seen it a lot. And that's why Ohio State hasn't sacked the quarterback. That's part of the reason they haven't created turnovers for shit. So we have to see some teams drop back and throw it to see what Ohio State can do on a true pass. A true passing scheme, passing emphasis, before we can even predict what they'll do against Bryce Young or predict what they'll do against Stetson Bennett.
All right, Zach, I want to move forward a little bit. Iowa versus Michigan. That's going to be what I think the most important game in the Big Ten this week. Correct me if I'm wrong. But, you know, Michigan.
Hold on, Chris. See, this is my problem. People are so fucking dumb. Like, you don't listen. Who said Cam Brown was going to lock down Brock Bowers? I said Jim Knowles will put Cam Brown on Brock Bowers. You need to open your fucking ears, you idiot. Like, these people are so dumb. Can you not hear? Do you need to get an ear, what are those called, Q-tips to clean wax out? Like, what is wrong with people? You don't hear what people say, and then you're delusional. Who's delusional? You're delusional. You literally just made up a point that I didn't make.
I love Q-tips. They do feel good in the ears.
See, Chris can't get down with the ultra aggressive comeback.
I love man, people. These people can't fucking listen. They fucking suck, man. Fuck, get the fuck out the chat. Anyway,
you sound like Cat Williams. What? go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry.
Iowa versus Michigan, a game we're gonna learn a lot from. obviously JJ McCarthy, and you know, can Iowa score? It's a big mess over there. A lot of people think Iowa could upset them. I'm not sure if that's the case, but I'm here for you to break it down.
Well, here I've had a lot of people comment that Iowa has a really good defense, and so Michigan might struggle against them. Like, they certainly don't have a really good defense, right? They have a decent rush defense. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, Rutgers averaged 2.454 yards per carry. Iowa State averaged over 3 yards per carry. Michigan is at least twice as talented as Iowa State and Rutgers. Like, make no mistake about it. Michigan will absolutely rush for 6 yards a carry against this front. Let's not make this front out to be something that it's not. Iowa's defense traditionally is a dominant defense. This year, I think they're just a really good defense, but I don't think Michigan will struggle to run the ball at all. And also, the take that got destroyed was, I said they'd be able to run the ball if and when J.J. McCarthy could open up the run game by connecting on in the throw game. Mm-hmm. So that needs to happen first. And Michigan is absolutely going to be able to do that against Iowa secondary. So that's the first part. The second part, because I'm racist, I want you to know the only offensive coordinator who's worse than Josh Gattis in the country is Brian Ferentz. And yes, he's black.
I can't with you, dude.
I'm a racist, Chris. I can't help it.
Oh my goodness. Ridiculous. Okay, so you don't think Iowa's going to be able to stop Blake Corum? Because I do, because for me and you, kind of tracking the progress and growth of J.J. McCarthy's, and we want to see what kind of team we're going to get at the end of the year. I don't think this quarterback we saw early is going to be the one we see late. And this is another step.
Iowa has always and will always die to stop the run. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like, they will stop the run and die doing so, because it's just in every fiber of Kirk Ferentz's body to be a stout rush defense. Like, they will die and get beat by 40 with teams airing the ball out to stop the run. And that's the one problem here is, schematically, they're going to commit to stopping the run. And there's times where you just have to throw it. If you load the box, if you squeeze corners, you play downhill safeties and quarters, like, they have extra bodies. Mm-hmm. And so Blake Corum, you could either say he has to make two guys miss, or you could say J.J. McCarthy needs to throw the ball. We got one-on-ones everywhere on the perimeter. And so that's what Michigan's going to have to do. And if they just start killing them with the pass game, then Blake Corum can get a little breathing room. Like, it's unfair to say they shut down Blake Corum if they commit 9 guys to the box. Mm-hmm. They shut down Michigan's offense or rushing offense by committing 9 guys to the box, not Blake Corum. What is he supposed to do? Right? You can't shut down the kid. I mean, you're shutting down the rush offense, right? It's not an indictment on Blake Corum as a running back if they commit 9 to the box.
Okay, so here's your next question. Is this a tougher test than Maryland?
It's a different test than Maryland, right? This will be a much greater test. I mean, the Maryland test was solely surrounding Michigan's defense, right?
Yeah.
They were going to air it out, and it was a pretty lethal offense. I mean, I'm not going to call it lethal, but close to lethal. And they were going to challenge Michigan's defense. This offense at Iowa is terrible. It might be the worst I've ever seen. Brian Ferentz is the most nepotistic hire that I've ever seen. And I mean, all you have to do is look at his track record. Like, he was a QC at New England for a year. Then he was a tight end coach at New England. Then he immediately for 1 year. And then he immediately got hired back to be the O-line coach at Iowa. And his dad has slowly progressed his career until he's the OC. And they've been awful on offense like forever. They averaged 1.58 yards per carry against South Dakota State.
Jeez.
Iowa, big-ass country boy lineman, couldn't push South Dakota State for 2 yards a carry. They couldn't even get 2. The score, they won the game 7-3 and didn't score a touchdown on
which
offense.
Is so bizarre. So bizarre.
It's the most putrid thing I've ever seen. So Brian Ferentz and Kirk Ferentz, for one, I mean, putting his son out there, it's like your son's not ready for school.
I kind of feel bad.
I mean, I feel bad too. But I mean, it's awful parenting, right? It'd be like if your son is getting ready for school and he's naked, not dressed yet, and you're like, the bus is coming, and you just push him out there and make him stand at the bus stop with his wang out. Like, it's just, how could you do that to your kid? Like, you're putting him out there and he's not ready, right? And that's what he's done. And the reality is, the guy might not be a good football coach, but his dad's gonna die trying to make him a good football coach. And it's embarrassing. I mean, 2 yards per carry against Iowa State. They threw for 92 yards and 1 interception. Mm. That is a stat line. Spencer Petras is has literally thrown one touchdown all year, and it was against Nevada in four games. He's thrown two interceptions. He's thrown twice as many interceptions as touchdowns. He's dead last in the Big Ten in passer rating, yards, completion percentage. You fucking name it. He's dead last in the Big Ten at it. Like,
I think this game's going to get ugly. I think if it was at night, I would feel better about Iowa because Kinnick Stadium has all those weird things. I don't know what it is. But I think this game's going to get ugly. But I do think it's a really intriguing test as kind of we track the development of a guy like J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what J.J. does. It'll be interesting to see if he can throw the ball and how that passing attack attacks a defense that's going to be aggressive against the run. Like, what will the RPOs and play action look like in this offense? And honestly, if Michigan goes out and rips off 6.5 yards a carry consistently against this defense, that is a testament to their rushing attack being pretty lethal, pretty legit.
Yep, I'll be tracking it. I'll be kind of waiting for it, and we'll see how it goes when we get there. Zach, this is the only game preview I have today. We have a couple more tomorrow. But I want to move on because I want to talk about something that I don't know if it's getting enough attention, especially from Ohio State fans. Zach, Sonny Styles is 17 years old. We have now seen him play significant snaps after I said on this show there's no way we would see him this year because he's just too young and inexperienced and you can't do that.
I mean, he's 17, right?
Yeah. It's like, I think they got one. And what is it like when you get someone who's really special? And I hate to put a lot of pressure on the kid, but Zach, it feels like a really special one is in there in the Woody currently.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the fact that here's the simple fact, right? In the Wisconsin game, I think it was the second or third drive, Sonny Styles was on the field, right? This is the best opponent Ohio State's faced. Not a great opponent, but it's the best opponent Ohio State's faced. Sonny Styles was on the field. That's the first point. So that tells you that this kid is way ahead of where he should be. But even further to that point, Chris, the safety room is loaded and playing at a high, high level. They don't need Sonny Styles to play. But he's showing them flashes, apparently, that he's special. And so they're accelerating his growth by getting him on the field. They're putting him on the field to try to see that spike in production and see how high his ceiling truly is. And it is incredibly impressive. And I have the defensive film breakdown on Patreon from the Wisconsin game where I talk about it. It's going to go out tonight. It's just really, really going to be cool to watch him play because Jim Knowles, you can already tell, he's not a charity playing time guy. Like, that linebacker room plays three guys and Cody Simon plays four. You know, Cody Simon plays a good amount, but they play three guys. No one else plays ever. Jim Knowles does not play people. It's not like, okay, he's tired, get this guy. And he's like, fuck tired. You should have conditioned him better in the summer. That's our starting Mike linebacker. He's playing.
It's not like the kids out there making mistakes, Zach, because we've seen multiple times if someone makes a mistake on the defense out of position, you know, takes a gamble they don't have to, they get pulled immediately. He's not just out there playing early. He's in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, and I thought he played really well. I mean, he had the one penalty, but he's a 17-year-old freshman. Like, what the fuck do you expect? Of course, I've seen guys that are seniors have penalties like that. Mm-hmm. But it's just going to be fun to watch.
What position do you think he's going to project to moving forward?
I have no fucking idea. That kid's a freak show looking body. I'm probably a safety. The way Jim Knowles plays defense, their safeties do everything. Everything. Mm-hmm. He's going to play safety, and he's going to be ridiculous.
It feels like the ultimate weapon because there's a lot of times, Zach, where you know Wisconsin will come out there and like three tight ends, and you have Sonny Styles out there on the field and two linebackers.
I mean, it's just that it's honestly a way to get a linebacker body, but also a safety in the game. He honestly very different skill set, not similar in playing ability, style, or anything. But his hybrid category or his hybrid value reminds me of Darren Lee. Darren Lee played our Sam linebacker. He played in the slot, right? But we didn't need to go nickel because the kid was a 4-4. Like he could run with any receiver. So, like, why go nickel? We want a linebacker body in that can run 4-4. Well, that's what Sonny Styles is going to be. He's going to be a big-ass safety linebacker body that can – it runs like a safety. Like, it's just the versatility that kid's going to bring to this defense, I mean, as soon as this year, like towards the end of this year, is going to be outstanding.
No, I agree, and it's definitely been an accelerated route. When I think about the guys at Ohio State, I think of Darren Lee as one. And then I think of Pete Warner's too, a guy that was a hybrid linebacker and, you know, despite popular belief, played a good amount of safety for Ohio State at times. And I've never seen a kid like Sonny Styles. I can't remember a time where a 17-year-old came and contributed and showed moments this early. Usually when guys reclassify, it kind of puts them behind the eight ball. But the kid has enormous upside. And instead of tackling kids, you know, little Jimmies and Joes from whatever school, from Worthington out there, he's in here hitting kids, you know, hitting grown men.
He's hitting Braylon Allen, this fucking 6'2" freak of nature running back. Like, oh, that wasn't what Dublin Coffin's running back looked like, I don't think, last year.
And he looks like he belongs. He looks less lost. So it's been really incredible. Zach, you know, I don't have enough about it. Zach, I do have coach speak, and then I have the good old super chats that I want to hit. So I pulled some quotes, you know, from the coaches, a couple from Day, a couple from Walton. I'm trying to go through it. So translate it for me. Ryan Day said much of the offensive game plan for Notre Dame involved Jaxon Smith-Njigba. And he said, oh boy, what are we doing now, when Jaxon Smith got hurt with the injury?
Well, they showed it in the Rose Bowl, right? They did a lot of it with Jaxon. And if you don't remember, I broke the Rose Bowl game down on, I think it was on Patreon. Yeah, it definitely was on Patreon, a film breakdown for Patreon. And what they did with Jaxon Smith-Njigba in the Rose Bowl game was, I mean, it was similar to what Sark did with Devontae Smith against Ohio State, right? They put him in the backfield. They motioned him a lot. And you saw that a little bit early in the Notre Dame game, and then obviously he got hurt. And so it's twofold, right? One, that goes to show you how important he was in their plans for this season. And that's why this long-term hamstring injury, and I know people are going to say he's going to be back for Penn State, all this other shit. Nobody fucking knows that. Not one person. They're hoping. They're hopeful that his hamstrings heal. But those things nag. You can't predict it. He's going to, in my opinion, he has a better chance to be out for the year than be back for Penn State. It doesn't mean he won't be back for Penn State, but the reason why is because I've coached receivers for a long time. When you have a double hamstring injury, he injured it and re-injured it. All the treatment in the world, everything he does, it's going to come down to how healed is it when he starts to run? Because he could go out there the first practice he's allowed to go and pull it again. Mm. So he'll be back for Penn State if this hamstring doesn't get re-injured. But if he rushes it back too soon for a Penn State game, he might re-injure it. So that's the first point I wanted to make. But he obviously had big plans in this offense. And you saw it in the Rose Bowl game. You started to kind of see it in the Notre Dame game, and then he got hurt. And obviously they had to throw those plans out the window. But it does speak to the fact, kind of what happened to us defensively when we played Jared Abadaris and Wisconsin. Our plan, the only plan we had in all the defenses we put in, was Bradley Roby was going to man cover Jared Abadaris. And that was everyone just, we had this first round corner. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going to shut him down. And every defense was just based on the foundation that Bradley's got that. Like, Roby has him. Don't worry about him. And then he came out in the game and Roby started getting cooked. Mm. And then the biggest problem was, I mean, corners get beat once in a while, right? Then their confidence tanks, then they start doing extra shit. They're not playing with fundamentals. Then they get cooked again. And you have to be able to give them some relief. Play zone. They had no relief. They had nothing to go to give Roby relief. And so basically what I watched that Saturday night was just a barbecue. I mean, Roby was getting cooked all over the field. And Urban's looking at the defensive staff, and I'll never forget it. I'm on the sideline. He looked at Kerry and said, "What are we doing? Get him out of man coverage." And Kerry looked at him and said, "Coach, that's all we have." And Urban like threw his headset 17 feet. And I'm like, I'm looking there. Like, you don't pay attention to the defensive game plan when you're on offense. I'm looking at him jaw dropped at Kerry like, "That's all we have? Like, we don't have anything else?" So you got to have you have to have either somebody you would, like Travion Henderson could have jumped in that role if he can catch the ball to the backfield, or whoever. You have to have a backup that if that player goes down and you have a lot of offense centered around, you know, focused on him, you got to have a backup plan, whether it's additional packages that aren't, or a backup for Jaxon Smith-Njigba if he does go down. Like, you have to have that plan B, or else you can get caught with your dick in your hand.
And it looks like they've started to shift Emeka into some of that stuff. If I had to guess kind of the way it's looked. Another thing on receivers, Day says that Julian Fleming's ability to crack safeties and block in the run game makes a huge difference for the Buckeye offense, because of his strength, he is a mismatch for a lot of DBs.
Patreon subscribers that watched that offensive breakdown that I put out, I think two nights ago yesterday morning. I mean, I was going crazy about Julian blocking, really all the receivers blocking, but he's got my vote of confidence. I mean, he didn't crack a safety once. So I don't know what Ryan's talking about. Maybe in practice he has, but he went to crack a safety once, but the safety chased the tight end and man backside. So he kind of got stuck with no one to block and turned to block the corner. But yes, his blocking ability in the Wisconsin game was stellar. It was outstanding. I gave it an A.
On the day on the young corners, I give a lot of credit to Tim Walton and Jim for preparing J.K. Johnson and Jair Brown for stepping up against Wisconsin. Day went on to say that neither player missed a practice the entire preseason, and they're both very talented.
That's awesome. And you saw it on Saturday. I mean, Wisconsin doesn't have any receivers that are worth a shit, but those kids played fucking great. I mean, they really did.
Mm-hmm. How rare is that for people not to miss a practice the entire preseason?
I mean, it's hard. It happens all the time. I mean, kids that it's actually really rare for a young kid because training camp's extremely hard. You have to know how to take care of your body, get what they call prehab and get treatment. Even when you're not hurt, you have to be in that training room pre and post practice every day. And kids are tired, especially young kids. I mean, it's hard. You're working, you know, 16, 18 hour days. They get tired. And so when they come in from practice, they're like, man, I'm not doing the training room. And they take a nap. And you could still time to take a nap, but I'm saying you have to get that treatment has to be in your routine. So kudos to their position coach, credit to Ryan Day and Mickey Marotti and the training staff for having that culture already built that these young kids came in and said, all right, I got to take care of my body if I'm going to make it. And they did. I mean, it's truly a testament to those kids are going to, I would bet a lot of money. Those kids are going to be great players. Not only because I watched them play and they are really talented, but the fact that they didn't miss one practice as a young player just speaks to their commitment to becoming a great player.
Tim Walton on Sonny Styles. He's been proving himself in practice every day, man. Again, he's a guy that's played a lot of reps. He's very mature at a young age, and it starts from home. He's progressing. He's a big kid that's strong. He showed he can handle it.
Wait, say it again. I want to say it again. I was just reading a comment. We're talking about Sonny Styles. Yeah, I saw it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's not really much to translate there. He is absolutely that. He's a big ass freak that is showing that he's ready to play now. And there's no more evidence of that than him cracking the rotation at a very deep group in the most critical game to date. So yeah, he absolutely is as advertised.
Mm-hmm. When they went on to ask Tim Walton about Sonny Styles' best attributes, he said he's tough, man, and he's seasoned for a young guy. He takes it serious. His approach to the game, his football knowledge, he can apply it. It's going to be great things coming from him. Just like so much praise for a young kid, Zach. I've never seen that in a press conference.
So much. And he also said you didn't read it. That starts from home.
Oh, yeah, that starts from home.
So, I mean, it's you can just tell this kid is – and that's what you see, right? You get a recruiting class – you're going to get, let's say you get 25 kids. You're going to get five kids that you're going to go, holy shit. Like this kid was raised right, coached right. Like this kid is a grown ass man and he's still a kid. Then you're going to get 15 that are kind of in the middle, right? You think they can become that. They're not there yet. And then you get about five that you're like, uh-oh, this kid's got to go through a drastic transformation if he's ever going to figure it out and ever going to see the field. And sometimes that has nothing to do with talent or ability. It has to do with just personality and maturity. And it's obvious Sonny Styles is a grown-ass man kid. Mm-hmm. Can you say that? Is that a real thing? We're making it a thing. Mm-hmm. You could be a grown-ass man kid.
You know, I know that everyone in Columbus, you know, high school football is glad that he's not around to pop their kids anymore. You know, I mean, that's just kind of how it's got to be. It's like, thank goodness he's at Ohio State because he would terrorizing the scene currently. Ryan Day went on to say, you know, talking about injuries, this is great because I want you to tell me how long these people are going to be out for. Ryan Day says Ohio State is hoping to at least have Cam Brown and Denzel Burke back at cornerback, but that Jordan Hancock's return is probably further out.
Yeah, I would imagine Jordan Hancock's done for the year. Whether he's injured for the year or not, if he comes back late in the year, he's still got a ton of practice before he could ever see the field. And you're going to have a veteran group. Hopefully Denzel Burke, you know, becomes the great player that I think he can become. Cam Brown should be playing like a first rounder at that point. And those two young corners I just watched, like it's going to be hard for him to pass them in this season. Now he may come, you know, going to the offseason spring ball. He may be the best corner on roster next year. Who knows? But you're probably not going to see Jordan Hancock this year. Just the reality of it.
Ryan Day, talking more about injuries, says the Buckeyes expect Lathan Ransom to be available this weekend, and that the staff will meet closer to game time about the status report in general moving forward so that it's more accurate when Ohio State releases it.
Still have no idea why he was out. I mean, there still was no like, hey, yeah, he was injured. It's just like, yeah, he should be back next week. We'll let you know before the game. It's like, what happened? Like, is he healthy? Is he dying? Like, does he have a terminal illness? What is going on?
The last sentence in that is weird. The status report in general moving forward so that it's more accurate when Ohio State releases it. What are they talking? What?
Apparently, they must have released the injury report before they made a decision on Lathan Ransom. Was he ready or not? So they didn't put him on the list. And then they made a game time decision and he actually couldn't go. They didn't want to put him out there. He wasn't ready, wasn't healthy. But the injury report didn't have him on it. So basically he's saying to Sean Barnhouse, the trainer, don't fucking put that out till I tell you to. that's what that statement meant. I already ripped the trainer's ass. That will not come out too early anymore.
Okay. Got you. Well, I appreciate it, Zach. This segment on Translated Coach Speak. I'm scrolling back up now to get to the Super Chats. I'm going to hop it out of here. This was a fabulous day. I had everybody say present if they checked in and hit the like button because we're taking menace attendance. Because what did they say? Menace University, home of the Hellraisers. I don't know who said that. I can't take credit for it. But all right, when I start hitting these Super Chats, then we're going to skate on out of here. You guys are awesome for doing all these comments. Also makes it tough. Number 12, I made the Gattis memes. Well, don't do that because we were told that it's personal and that's asking for an ass beating. If you,
it was funny, though.
It was funny. It was funny. Gattis is to Mario what Kerry Coombs was today.
Combs. Chris, Combs. I got it. Combs, like a comb in Combs. Your hair. It's like the third time
never,
I've done it.
I've never heard of one of those.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't disagree at all.
Well, I think Kerry's more of a stand-up guy than Josh.
I don't know. I mean, Kerry would never argue with fans. I don't know about stand-up guy.
I was fucking around. That was more about me. That
I'm not going to attack that man's character. Fans. I mean, he did bang a recruit's mom, though. What are we talking about? So we certainly can, I guess.
Oh, man, fuck YouTube. Get your own server, Zach.
I'm telling you, if I could get off of YouTube and go somewhere else and Chris could still get paid the money that YouTube's paying us, I would love to. Maybe one day, Chris.
Yeah, well, we have, I mean, I have Twitch plans for the platform like in the near future at some point. So
yeah, but I'm saying maybe one day we'll have our own server and you can just go to our website and watch.
Oh, that'd be fabulous. That'd be fabulous. That would be a degenerate shit show, though, if we had our own server with no rules. But hey, we're here for it. JJ Stroud Young, who's winning the fight?
Like JJ Stroud fight? Young, a fist fight? Probably Bryce Young. You got to go with Bryce Young.
Isn't JJ from Chicago?
JJ might be scrappy. I don't know. That's a good question. It's not Stroud. CJ's finishing third. I know that much.
No, I'm right with CJ. Man, CJ got the dreads now. I'll take CJ in that fight.
Come on, man. He got
the dreads peeking out the back of the helmet. You know what the deal is. No. Damn it, Brady. We can't really say this on. I would call the blank hotline every Saturday as a Miami fan. Chill.
Don't joke about that.
Yeah, chill. Adam, thank you for the two. Zach versus Gattis. Ladder match. Who y'all got?
Let's hear it in the chat because I have no idea. That man might be able to fight. I mean, I don't know. I'm not like these people out here like, I'll whoop his ass. I'm a badass. I don't know. He might beat my ass. Who knows?
What is a ladder match?
It must be a wrestling thing with a ladder, I would assume. I'd hit the shit out of him with a ladder, though, if in a ladder fight.
Fucking hit him with the ladder. Gee, golly shucks. Brian, thank you for the five. Yo, Coach Zach, run in Oklahoma and give Gattis the ball. So I can. I love you guys. You guys are absolutely.
Menace Army is absolutely the best.
A lot of these aren't even questions. It's just like the kind of like fuck Gattis statements. If Michigan can't beat Iowa, they might as well skip the trip to Columbus this year like they did in 2020. Hashtag an average fan podcast. Thanks, Lil Fleazy, for the five. What do you think, man? If they lose to Iowa, what happens?
Oh, God. It's not going to happen. No chance it happens. So it's not even remotely close to a chance.
Oh, this is a great question. Is Stroud not having JSN the best thing to happen for him and for these new wide receivers having to step up? And I think it does accelerate the growth. I think that's an important part.
So, I mean, if in a perfect world, right, Ohio State doesn't drop a game, and whenever Jaxon Smith-Njigba comes back 100% healthy, those young kids, those players got so much, especially because they were going to focus so much of their offense around Jaxon Smith-Njigba. They were literally planning to try to get him in the Heisman conversation. Like, that's how much of an emphasis he was going to have. So the other receivers would have gotten far less looks, far less touches. Mm-hmm. So it absolutely will not only accelerate their growth, but it will get them the confidence to make those plays when they need to. So in a perfect world, Jaxon Smith-Njigba comes back. You look at the Michigan game or the whatever, Penn State game, whatever game it is that Jaxon can come back healthy, they're going to be a much better offense because he didn't play. And that's fucked up to say, but they will be.
Yeah. No, that's right. I mean, I think a lot about Alabama. And Jameson Williams was on the field so much. And then when he went down, it was like deer in headlights for all the young receivers. Oh, and even Nick Saban referenced it, like, you know, in a meeting afterwards. Like, the young guys wanted to pout, wanted to do this because they weren't getting the ball all year. And then when it was their time, they were deer in headlights. And Bryce Young also struggled a lot when Jameson Williams wasn't out there. For mm-hmm. C.J. Stroud, he's getting that experience right now. And I think that is important moving forward.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think it's very important.
Why doesn't Chris Campbell ever come to the Shoe? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know him. I've never met him. He's one of my favorite Buckeyes from when I was younger and a kind of a fan. So I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
If Michigan and Minnesota play in the Big Ten championship, do they still play for the Brown
Jug? That's a great question. I have no. I mean, I guess, right? I mean, that's a great question. Is it? I don't know. Yes, I'm saying yes. They bring the Brown Jug to Indianapolis in Lucas Oil, and that Brown Jug gets his first glimpse of the beautiful bright lights in Indianapolis.
Here for it. Zach, I appreciate you, man. Great show today.
Really good. Everyone, I appreciate everybody. Go ahead and go over to Foreskin Pete's live and just spam it. Spam it with, and that's what he wants. He wants the attention. That's why he came at me. So if you want to give him the attention, go over there and talk shit. Have fun with it. I'm not going to. I'm not giving him one view from me because I don't like people that are incompetent and talking about something they don't know anything about. So anyways, that's all I got for you, Chris. Make sure you check out MyBookie, promo code Menace, deposit match. Also, check out Prize Picks for all your fantasy plays. Also, promo code Menace. Check both of those out. They support the show. You support the show, so support them. We appreciate you guys. Menace out.